Brother Guy, I know what you mean last week when you said this is intimidating. It definitely is. So I first just want to apologize for the next few minutes. It's still pretty emotional for us, and so we're going to struggle through it at times, but I do appreciate the opportunity to thank the Lord publicly for what he did for us and for Braden, and the prayers that were answered and the way that we all grew in our love and appreciation for the Lord and for our church family. So I want to start by saying my life verse. When I was in junior high school, my youth pastor encouraged us to come up with a verse that you could cling to and you could apply it to your life and look back at it whenever troubles or things happen. And the verse that I picked was Job 23:10. But he knoweth the way that I take, and when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Little did I know when I was in junior high school what we would be facing this time in our life. You know, my youngest son having cancer, 4 months into treatment, my sister getting cancer. And, you know, I just never would have imagined that. But the Lord always is with you, and the Lord puts trials in your way to test you and to grow you. And this was definitely a challenge for us. And I'm not saying that I'm gold by any means, but I'm saying that this verse meant a lot to me. A lady that was in our church in Wisconsin when we used to live there, her name was Erna Wagner. If you guys followed our Caring Bridge post, you might have seen her make comments on there. She was one of the sweetest and dearest Christians we know. And she's a great friend and a great influence to us. And she endured a lot of heartache. When their kids were very young, her husband died of Parkinson's. When we got there and we were serving with her in the church, her second son had Parkinson's, and he passed away. The father passed away, and now one of her other sons has Parkinson's, and she knows what that's going to mean. She was the most faithful Christian. She always had a smile on her face. She was always praising the Lord. And I used to look at that and admire and say, wow, I mean, what faith she has that she can take all of that on herself and be put into that kind of a situation and remain strong. And I would say, there's no way I could do that. Until I got into this, I really understood what she was doing. So Joshua 6:12 says, and the angel of the Lord appeared unto him, and he said unto him, the Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. That man that Joshua was talking about was Gideon. Gideon did wonderful things for the Lord. He was a mighty warrior. But when he was first asked to do things, he pushed back. And he said, Lord, I'm too weak. I'm too poor. I can't do these things. These difficulties are too strong. And that's when I learned that God doesn't ease our fears by affirming our abilities. He eases our fears by confirming his presence. Sorry. And that's what we felt this year and a half. We felt the Lord's presence. He was with us. He was there every step of the way. And now I can look back at Miss Erna and I can see how she had the strength. It wasn't her. It was the Lord. And we struggled. We had our times. But we knew the Lord was with us and he carried us. And that's kind of the theme that I'm going to continue as I talk about how the Lord was with us and how he cared for us and how he was there to lift us up when we couldn't do it ourselves. Back when we were there, one of the things I did was I would run a lot. And I did that for kind of a stress reliever it was a chance for me to just get away from everything and relax and talk to the Lord, listen to music. Now it's a chore to run. But back then, I actually, every day I looked forward to that. And there's a couple of songs that I would listen to every day when I would run. And one of them was I Need You, Lord. And the other one was Bless the Lord. And sometimes it's called 10,000 Reasons. And even through this difficult time with Braden, we had so many reasons to praise the Lord and to bless the Lord. And I mean, literally it was daily. I mean, little things, you know, having Braden just pee, how much he had to pee was a big deal. And we praised the Lord for that. And it was the whole time. So I'm not going to rehash everything, but I just kind of want to start at the beginning and talk about a few things that the Lord was clearly in this. When Braden, it was early January 2016, he woke us up. It was a Monday morning, about 5 in the morning, and he was hurting bad. He had pain in his stomach. He was crying. We knew Braden's pretty tough. We knew something was wrong, and we thought it might have been his appendix or something. So we decided Jen would take him to the emergency room, and I went on ahead and went into work. And as time went on, me and Jen were texting back and forth and said that they were doing tests, and his pain went away, and he was back to his normal, you know, cutting up self. And that was relieving. But something, as I was working, I was just like, man, I think I need to go there for whatever reason. I wasn't worried. I wasn't panicky, but I just felt I needed to go. And I think that was the Lord. So we go, and the ER comes, doctor comes back with his results. And he didn't tell us verbally. He just said, I think something's wrong. And he wrote it on a piece of paper, and he showed me and Jennifer so he didn't, you know, say it in front of Braden. And he had on there, he thought it was lymphoma or leukemia, but he's pretty sure it was cancer. And, I mean, we were just devastated. We'd never admitted or never thought that would be the case. So he told us, he said, you could take your time with this. Maybe it's an infection. Or he said, if you want to take this aggressively, you know, go see a doctor. And that's what we chose to do. And we were literally at the Children's Hospital in Colorado Springs 2 days later meeting with the doctor. And that doctor, when he looked at his blood work, he looked at him, he's like, your son is healthy. He said, there's nothing wrong with him. And we left there again, these kinds of highs and lows, thinking that maybe we were out of the woods. And as time went on, his pain would come back, and they did another scan, and his lymph nodes were still enlarged. So they decided to do a biopsy. And one thing that Dr. Levian said is he said that never in his history, and he'd been an oncologist for years, that an emergency room doctor would ever make a diagnosis of cancer. And again, that was the Lord getting us to the right place. So when that doctor called Jennifer and told us that it was neuroblastoma, we didn't even know what it was, frankly, but it was pretty traumatic. When the doctor says, don't go home and Google that, you know that it's a big deal. Well, at that point, we had kind of held everything back from Braden. No sense worrying him until we knew. That day was the toughest day I've ever had. Having to bring him into my room, tell him he has cancer. We cried, we hugged, we cried and cried and cried, and then we prayed that the Lord would heal him. We prayed that the Lord would spare him. He would take this cancer from him. And we put his life in his hands. And there is a peace that came over us. We didn't know what was going to happen. At that point, we didn't even know what the prognosis was. I mean, we didn't know how long it was going to take, but we just knew that God was with us. And when we got done praying. I know the Lord gave him a peace too. We finished, told him I loved him. And just like Braden says, he's like he does, he's like, hey, Dad, you want to go play a game? I was like, yeah, I'd love to play a game. And we did. And that was just kind of the way that Braden did things. He was pretty carefree. And it's not necessarily him. I just think the Lord was really with him and gave him peace and comfort and knowing that he was going to be with him this whole time. So once we got started, this was probably one of the most amazing things that happened to us. We knew we were going to have to go to Denver. We didn't have any place to go, any place to live. We didn't know what we were going to do. We just knew that we had to show up for chemo. And a dear family called the Haynes, truly angels of God, they have a history of housing families that are battling cancer. And they let them stay in their guest house for free of charge, as long as it takes. Well, this is another way how the Lord was guiding our steps. Years before that, we were living in Florida, and my parents and everybody moved back to Colorado, and my mom went to work for a nursing home in Montrose, and she worked there until she retired. And the lady that was her boss was that bridge to the Haynes for us. She retired about 5 years ago because her husband was diagnosed with bone cancer, and they went to Denver, and they stayed with the Haynes. And they were out. They were living in Florida. And when they saw my mom's Facebook post saying, pray for Braden, he has cancer, she called the Haynes. And she says, hey, she said, there's a dear family that could use your help. Do you have an opening? And they did. And they opened their house to us and let us stay there. And it was unbelievable to have that burden lifted off of us and to have somebody there to be with us. Just another way that the Lord was guiding. Once we got into the hospital, it was difficult, no doubt. And the first day of our treatment was when we finally got the roadmap and we realized how long this was going to be. People there, and I'm not saying this just to brag on Braden, but I mean, the Lord did a lot of things through him. He was so strong. The things that he endured, I don't know if I could have done it. I'm pretty sure I couldn't have, but he did. He was so strong. The Lord was showing through him. The staff loved him. As a matter of fact, the nurses would fight over him when they would come to work. They would request to watch him. Every time they would come in the room to check on him, say how his pain was, he always gave the same answer. I'm good. I'm good. Just day after day after day. Sometimes we chuckled because we knew he wasn't good. The doctor and nurse would come in. He'd say, I'm good. They would leave. He'd turn to us crying, I'm hurting. We're like, you just had the nurse in here. They could have done something about it. But that was just his way of saying that. So there was one time when things were pretty heavy and it's pretty dark. And my wife asked him, said, Braden, how are you doing? And don't say good. What he said, we would have never guessed in a million years he would say that. And he said, if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't have been able to meet all these nice people. So even in the darkest time, he still had a great outlook. And I can't, there's only one way that came, is from the Lord. It was nothing that we did. It was nothing that he did. It was just the Lord being there for him. He did say twice through the whole time, why me? And I can't do this. And that was heartbreaking, having him tell you that. And all we could do is pray and just trust the Lord. And it really was a learning experience for me, because I promise you, I asked the Lord why hundreds of times. And I didn't know why. I mean, why a 9-year-old and why not a 43-year-old man that has had his chance to serve the Lord faithfully and failed. You know, why me? And why him? Why not me? And to this day, I still don't know exactly why, but there is things that have showed their way. One thing, when he was diagnosed with this, when me and Jen prayed, we prayed specifically for healing, and we prayed specifically that somebody would come to know Christ through this, and through our testimony or whatever it would be, just somebody would come to know him. And we know of two people that happened. One was a coworker of mine. She works with me at Train. She goes to Mountain Shadows Baptist Church, and her husband was not saved, and he works at Train too. And they daily would, or whenever it would come out, they would read the Caring Bridge. And weeks upon weeks, and those of you that read that, you know that quite often the gospel message was portrayed in Jennifer's posts. And through that, Ray got saved. And, you know, that makes it worth it, knowing that somebody is going to save to heaven through our trials. We had some other great blessings. My business or my company was great. They let me work remotely, and I could work in the hospital room. I could work at home, and that was a tremendous, I mean, it was amazing. One thing that was not present up in the oncology ward was dads, and it wasn't because they didn't care. It was they had to be at home working and raising money for their family. And I was able to do that. And the nurses were quick to say that, too. They're like, you're very fortunate. And gave us an opportunity to praise the Lord in front of them. You know, even my work, I can see the Lord guiding our steps. When we used to live in South Carolina, I had an engineering business. And some things happened, and I decided to close that. And ended up moving to Train in La Crosse, which ended up transferring me here to Pueblo so we could be near the Children's Hospital in Colorado, which is one of the best pediatric hospitals in the country. So just those steps of happening, I could tell that the Lord was preparing us for this time. So let me just kind of say a couple things in conclusion before Jennifer comes up. Thank you to each one of you here at this church. That's yet another step that the Lord guided, bringing us all together. And we could definitely not have done it without your help and your support, whether it was financial, whether it was cars, letters, foods. I mean, the list goes on. We are so grateful to each one of you. And we can't thank you guys enough for your prayers and your support. And we do appreciate it. And the last thing I want to say is about prayer. I know that our family's prayer life is strengthened through this. We witnessed a huge answer to prayer with Braden being healed of his cancer. And every one of you that prayed as well saw God answer that. And I was looking for the verse and I couldn't find it. It's somewhere in the New Testament, but it talks about every time you ask the Lord and he answers it, it should give you more strength and confidence to pray even harder the next time, knowing that he hears you and he listens. And I just challenge each one to, and myself, to keep praying. When we were in Denver, we brought everything before the Lord. And, you know, you get back home and you kind of get out of that routine a little bit, and it's a challenge to bring everything before the Lord. That's what the Bible says. And just so thankful for answered prayer, the way the Lord leaded and worked in our lives.
Well, I think I totally get it, Braden. During all his treatments, pokes, and hard times, when he would get done, he would want ice cream. So, Brayden, if I can get through with this, can we go get ice cream this afternoon? Because now I get it. But really, I really want to be truthful with you and honest. I have wrestled a lot with his cancer as a mother, as a woman. And I know that I live in a house full of boys. And throughout this journey, I was a hot mess, a southern hot mess. And bless Garrett's heart for putting up with me. I set up the Caring Bridge, and it really helped me focus and gather my thoughts, my emotions. When you guys were reading that, I look back and start reading them, and I don't know really who wrote them. I don't. God was so good. And when I wrote them, it was almost like a reflection or a mirror back to me, preaching to me, Jen, stay strong, pray, follow the Lord, focus on Him. Because my emotions was like a hamster on a wheel. And Garrett would be the one to kind of jerk me off and say, breathe, Jen, get it together. Okay. And how Garrett and I reacted, and Garrett played a really big role in that, in helping me, like, don't show that to Brayden, don't show your fears, encourage him. It really trickled down to Brayden, I think. The doctors commented on that, like how you all react as we're telling you things, or if some things changed. When they had the tumor resection, they couldn't get it all out. Just different things. We were just like, okay, what's the next step? And instead of just, I mean, some families really would just fall apart, and you would see that, and you would see, you know, just parents and kids getting angry at the nurses and the staff, and they're there to help you. We were whatever the nurses and doctors needed to do, we wanted to do it, and it really helped in the whole process. And even every single time we'd be admitted into the hospital, there are some families, I'm sure the nurses and doctors are like, oh great, here they come. But it was when they see Brayden, it was like, there's Brayden. Oh, Brayden, he's here. And in my mind, I'm thinking, we should be excited that we're here. I mean, but it was a joy to be around these nurses and get to know them and the doctors, even the housekeeping. Brayden will tell you that I talked to everyone. I wanted to know, what's your story? What's going on in your life? And I would just chat away with them. It was a great ministry for me. But growing up, we used to sing a song, a little Bible song. I don't know if you know. It's about a wee little man that climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see, Zacchaeus. And I heard a saying not too long ago, and I held to that. I thought, oh, that is so good. And it says, long before Zacchaeus needed to see Jesus, God had the sycamore tree planted. Let that sink in. You know, long before Brayden had cancer, God was already at work. And so it was about 4 years ago, Brayden's 10 now, getting ready to turn 11. He came into the room in Wisconsin and started a conversation and started asking questions about Jesus. And he often did that before that, but he would get enough information, then he'd go run off and play. But this night, I could really tell that the Holy Spirit was just dealing with him. He was wrestling, you know, that uncomfortable feeling, and you're just not wanting to let go of whatever it is. And so we just sat down, and I showed him through the Bible how Jesus died on the cross, and he did it innocently. He was not accused of anything, but he did it for sins. And we went through the process of what sin was. And then, you know, the biggest thing for little kids, they can go through all these questions, but when you get to the part of, they'll name all the bad sins, but do you sin? Oh, no. You know, it's just that part. But Brayden was at that point, and he realized Jesus died on the cross. Jesus died for sins, but he died for my sins, and he wanted to make it personal for him. So at age 7, he asked Jesus to come into his heart and save him. And so some of those, I couldn't look at the pictures, but I don't know if you noticed, looking back, there's a lot of them where he's smiling. And I was kind of overwhelmed by that, and I know it's the Lord. It's of the Lord, the peace that he has in his heart. God allows interruptions in each of our lives. Some are daily, you know, flat tire, something not going on good at work. Some periodically, you know, a sickness or just something you need to take care of financially. But sometimes he'll take us through a really dark, long valley. And that's hard. And I guarantee in this room, sitting here, there are people going through some dark valleys, some struggles, some strongholds that God wants to get a hold of. And I remember when I got the phone call from that doctor, I was in a place where every woman should be shopping. I'm glad I was not at home. I was with my mother-in-law, and we were actually shopping for a baby shower gift in Kohl's. And when the phone rang, she was standing right next to me, and I said, "Oh, that's the doctor." And it had been 7 days we had waited for the biopsy, and I didn't know the response. They said, probably more than likely it's a benign tumor, more than likely it's probably lymphoma, very treatable. And I remember when I said, "Oh, it's the doctor," I'm saying hello, she dashes off, and I'm like, you know, "Mom." But she did not want to be there. I don't blame her. She wanted to give me, you know, the doctor. And I remember standing there and him just starting to talk. And, you know, the doctors, they just have this lingo. And I was trying to catch everything. I remember asking him, "Can you please spell what he has? You know, neuroblastoma." I'm thinking of the brain, neuro. And he was telling me not to Google it, but I did. And it was really hard to process. It was very hard from that day or that moment. I remember purchasing the baby gift and just crying in front of the store clerk, thinking, "I can't tell her that my son has cancer." And then we had to go to Garrett's work because I didn't want to call him. We had to drive there. And that was really hard. He came out to the car and sitting there and just, what were we going to do? How are we going to tell him? What does this mean now? And the process and him having to walk back into work to pack up his bag and tell his boss, "My son has cancer." I mean, it changes everything. Anything you worry about, anything, I don't know, my whole outlook on life just changed. I remember my calendar book. If you know me, I love my calendar. We need to set a date. I want to write it in my calendar. Doctor's appointments, boy's schedule, Garrett's travel schedule. I can't keep up with it. And all of a sudden, my date book just became blank. It froze. It didn't matter. I had just signed Colby up for spring soccer. And I had to call the coach and tell him, you know, he can't do soccer. Justin was getting close to wanting to get his permit, and I looked at him. I'm like, "We don't have time for this. We can't. You know, you're going to have to wait on that." But it was exciting when Braden finished his treatment this past spring. Colby got to go back on the soccer team and play and be with his buddies. And at the end of the season, his team wanted to just share about Braden and the journey that he had fought and the cancer and how he was now cancer-free. This was in March or May. And as they announced each of the players out, it was an all-star game, they wanted Braden to run out with his brother. And I don't know, as a mom and a dad, the joy, like you're excited that your middle son's back to playing soccer, doing what he loves. But to see like Braden kind of looking up at his brothers are running out and him being able to be there to cheer break Colby's team on, that was just a blessing. All along, the boys, Justin and Colby, would root on Braden, do anything he needed, and they kind of had to take a back burner to what they wanted to do, to be around their friends, and everything. So that was a great honor. During Braden's last 6 months of treatment, things started slowing down, but it was a very intense treatment. We were able to kind of come home more often on the weekends. So I don't know if you know boys or if you have any boys, but they bounce off the walls. I don't know what that is in a home. But Justin and Colby for 6 months, they were so patient. And so at the end of the 6 months, we decided they love basketball. They've been playing since they were five on a team. And we thought, we don't know how it's going to work, but you're going to go back on the basketball team. And there were some days where they couldn't go to practice because we would be in Denver. Or there'd be some days we'd be up in Denver and one of us would say, can you run the boys to a Denver gym so they could play? And the coach was so understanding. And it was good communication for the boys to text them when they couldn't be there, when they could. And at the end of the season, Garrett was out of town for work. And we went into the banquet. And that was in March. Braden was nearing the last treatment. And he sat there, and every year they give out three awards. They give the MVP, most valuable player. They give the most improved. And then the third one they give is most inspirational to the team. And he handed out the first two, and then he got to the last one, most inspirational. And he sat there, or he stood there with all the players, and he said, I can't give this out to just one player. And in my mind, I'm thinking, he's going to give it to all the players? And he said, there are two players on this team that has inspired every one of us. He says, they've never complained when they couldn't be at practice. But then when they would show up, they would give it their all. They inspired us all to be good examples with good attitudes despite what is faced. They had leadership and perseverance. And he said, I think we all can learn from these two. And so he handed the awards to Justin and Colby. But it was Braden that I would look at, and he's just sitting there smiling and clapping away because he's so excited for his brothers. And all along the journey, Justin and Colby was there for Braden. So it was just a great opportunity for them and for God to reward his favor to them. You know, it was hard digesting what Braden had. He had stage 3 neuroblastoma. Neuroblastoma is formed from the nerve cells. They are immature cells, if I understand this correctly, that do not form and turn into the cancerous cells. They actively divide and recreate. The pathologist informed me that neuroblastoma is so hard to follow or try to kill because sometimes they can turn it to a deadening and it will reverse back into the cancer cell, which just is crazy. His roadmap, as the doctors will call it, each staging of cancer has a different protocol. And so I didn't know any of this. Most people I know have had breast cancer, lung cancer, a brain tumor. Some people take oral chemos. Some people just go in and do an infusion for like a day or two. But for Braden, his chemo rounds would last for 5 days. And we had the option of doing like a daily infusion, but there was so much that could go wrong. And I am terrified of needles. I am terrified of doctors. I'm crazy in a hospital. I'm a germ phobia. Even when the babies or our boys were born, I had this idea that they could be switched. So I'd be like, here, go follow the baby. They're wherever they're going. And he's like, what? And I want to know exactly, okay, what are you doing? We were asking, what are you giving Braden? What has he had? I would mark it down. I didn't want him to be overdosed. And they're, you know, we're all human. And the doctor even told me, he said, I am human as can be. So it is up to you as a mom to be his advocate, to speak up, to let us know. You're going to know when he's not feeling good. You're going to know if something's going on. And you're probably more than likely going to see an allergic reaction before us. And so we were always on guard watching, monitoring him. He went through 5 rounds of chemo. He got the surgery. It was a 5-hour surgery to remove the tumor. And his tumor was near his spine, which was very tricky of trying to remove it, so they couldn't get it all because they didn't want to damage the nerves back there. Then he had to get a stem cell collection, the white blood cells, to be frozen to later have a bone marrow transplant. And for you guys, I don't know if a transplant to me is like a heart, like you're taking someone else's heart and putting it in or that type of thing. But this actually is very anticlimactic. They froze the blood. And then when it came time for the bone marrow transplant, for the first week they gave him a very high dose concoction, high dose of chemo that pretty much killed everything. I mean, just wiped him out to the bottom. And then on day seven, it took 10 minutes. They had a little bag of that stem cells, about 7 million. And they just put it right back in him to rescue his body. And the part of the transplant takes several months, up to 6 months, up to even a year for it to graft, for him to start producing his own cells in his bone marrow. After that, we were so exhausted of being in the hospital a month, we went straight to radiation. He was supposed to have 12 days of radiation, but because they couldn't get all the tumor out, we needed to do 20. So we went over to the adult hospital next door, 5 days a week for 4 weeks in a row. That was hard because he was very weak. Sometimes he would go in a wheelchair. Sometimes he would go in a wheelchair and then walk a little bit. And then after that, we're like, you know, surely we can take a break. No, now we need 6 months of immunotherapy. I am praying that the immunotherapy will overtake chemo altogether. It might be the next era of treatment. It targets the cells, the cancer cells, the neuroblastoma cells, but doesn't kill the good ones. So with neuroblastoma, even though he was wiped out and he probably more than likely was cancer-free at that point, neuroblastoma cells hide. They hide in the bone marrow, they hide whatever. So the 6 months we went through and tried to rev up his white blood cell counts and everything, and then them go around and they would target, if they found him, they would kill it. So it was very hard for us. There was no breaks and everything. And sometimes, many times, Braden would wake up and he'd be like, I don't feel good. Mom, I can't do this. And what do we moms do? Oh, you know, yeah, you just need to rest. Yeah, don't do it. But oh no, these nurses would come in, good morning, and they had their goals. The physical therapist would come in. They wanted to make sure they were moving his muscles. And I'd be sitting there like, well, he's not going to get up for, you know. But those beautiful nurses, and he would get up, he would push himself, and I would just be amazed. And they knew that that was for the good, that was for him. Braden's best bud, best friend, I don't know if you know it. Does anyone know who his best bud is? It's his dad. They are tight. They have been tight since day one. And they just, they're so tight that sometimes through in the hospital when I would be helping him, he wouldn't want to do something. Oh, I want to save it for when Dad gets here. Or, you know, if he needed to be bathed, let's go and get your bathing done, your shower. No, and just he would stall for me. So he would frustrate me. And I wanted to get it done with Garrett working all day and then him coming up to switch off with me. Well, in the meantime, Garrett would be home at the guest house trying to get his work done on his computer, answering the phone lines. And the boys would be doing their schoolwork. And about 2 to 3, they'd get done and they'd start bouncing off the walls, hyper, wanting to do something, and be driving Garrett crazy. So we would always try to do about every 24 hours is what we could stand or that it would get to you, the four walls and just being in the hospital. So we would always switch off every 24 hours about 4 to 5 p.m. And he would come up and we would compare notes and we would be like happily glad to switch off. No offense, Braden. And then as I would go home after being there that 24 hours and pouring myself into Braden and making sure everything that he needed, I would pray, Lord, you've got to give me more strength because now I'm going home to even more hyper kids of teens. And so I'd go home, and Justin, Colby, you know, I hadn't seen them. I wanted to check in what's going on, how's school. And it was all activity with boys. So we would go play putt-putt. We would go do tennis. I remember I was like, let's go to the Goodwill and get some tennis rackets. And so we did a lot of activities. I would even take them up to the soccer field, hit the soccer balls around. And everything. And so that helped them. Many people worried about Justin and Colby. And so it kind of would stress me. Well, you know, they'd ask me, how was they doing? Did they feel left out? And then I'd be like, I don't know. So throughout the journey, I would check on them. Like, how you doing? What's going on? Is there anything you need? And every single time I would ask them, they would say, Mom, it's not about us. Don't worry about us. We're fine. We just want Braden to get better. That's all we care about.
And I would tell them, thank you so much, but there are needs you have, and if you need something, let us know. I know you miss your friends. I know you miss your home, your surroundings. They were overwhelmed with the Denver traffic. They would always say, oh, we hate this Denver traffic. They miss the Pueblo. And I'm like, Pueblo has traffic. But they're like, no, it's so much easier from getting places. They would often go up to the hospital to hang out with Braden and play games. And it would really get Braden off the chemo and the sickness. Justin always wanted to raid the chocolate, hot chocolate stations to get his chocolate fix. And then Colby always liked the fridge for the family fridge with the canned Sprites. He would goof off in there. But I wanted to show you real quick Braden's hardest challenge. And I often talked about it in Caring Bridge to kind of give you a picture. Was when he started chemo, he had to get a power port. And it's like a little purple plastic kind of triangle thing. And on that, under the skin, is kind of spongy like a squeeze ball. And so it was placed here, and he's so skinny as it is. So when they would have to access that for any chemo, blood transfusions, he had a certain size needle that he used for his. And you probably can't see it, but it's about 2 inches long, and it's rather thick. So that would have to be pressed into his skin. And a lot of people thought, oh, it's the poking, just the one poke and you're done. That was traumatic for Braden, but what was hurting him was he had a nerve underneath that. All that week while it was in, it hurt. It was tender. He could feel it. So he would not lay on this side. He would not raise his arm. He was just very, and so I don't know, sometimes when we would come back for visits or when during therapy, he really had his shoulders kind of drawn in. And it was almost like a protection. He didn't want anyone to hit that. And so it was very hard for him. And I can't even imagine. The hospital had a program called the Courage of Beads. And each time you got poked, each time you had chemo, each time you did physical therapy, a surgery, you would get a bead. And so each bead represents something that Braden went through. And these are not all the beads that I brought. I just strung these up. But the black ones that you can see are the different pokes that he had to get for that access of that port. The white ones are all the chemo that went into his body. The hearts were when he was in ICU. And so it's overwhelming. He doesn't really get into it as much because he thinks that's kind of girly, but he doesn't know it. But I'm having a really cool sports little container made for you, and you can put them all in and keep. But you know, when you're in the valley and you're in a dark time, God brings blessings. And sometimes we can be so focused on our circumstance that we don't look around. And so for us, we had to focus on the blessings. We had to look at what had happened. And you all ministered so much to us. You don't even know. And you think, oh, I just did this. No, it was a need, and it was met, and it meant a lot. We had visits. We had cards. There was care packages. There was gas cards, frozen meals, always burritos. There were books, music, homemade cards that were very special to us. We had mouth rinses, toothpaste, and oral care from Doc. And even people sent jokes to Braden through the cheer cards at the hospital. Every single need was met. And this is something small and minute. I'm telling you how good our God is. Garrett had to travel. So that was challenging, trying to juggle everything, and God was so good. So I would prepare myself mentally how much I would have to put out for Braden and for the boys and just keeping it all together. And this small request, I know it sounds stupid, but we needed toilet paper. And I didn't have time to go get it. So I remember praying to God, God, help me to either have time to go get it or you just need to provide it. We're getting down to the last roll. And I am not kidding you. I get an email from someone in here that said, hey, I just happened to drop off some paper products for you in your garage. And there's also a surprise there for you. And I just remember sitting there crying to God, like, why did I even doubt you? You are so good. You provided the toilet paper. And when I got there, there was paper towels and toilet paper. But the surprise, it was chocolate. And I'm like, God, I didn't even ask for that. But it was good. I needed it. Another person in the church made all kinds of natural things for my face and oils and hot tea leaves or tea leaves for hot tea. That was something I really enjoyed just kind of in the afternoons to try to relax myself. And then someone else, as they were dropping off frozen meals, spotted bananas in my freezer. And when our bananas get bad, I just kind of throw them in the freezer, and then when I get a chance, I make banana bread. And so I get a text from this friend, and she's like, hey, I noticed there are some bananas in your freezer. Can I get some and make some banana bread? And I said, oh, that would be a blessing. Braden loves banana bread. And so I know that sounds something small, but there were days where Braden couldn't eat. The chemo changes your taste buds. Many times he would just throw up, and if you just even showed him food, he couldn't. There were times where when we needed to eat, we could not eat in the room because of the smells for him. So we would eat outside the room or down at the kitchen. But there were several times we would go up for a week at a time, and all that he maybe would eat would he would work on that banana bread. And he might could get a slice that morning or two slices the next day, or once the chemo came off, I think I could. And it was just such a blessing to him. So we were sitting there one day in the hospital, and he said, Mom, don't get mad. And I'm like, okay, what did you do? And he's like, I like your banana bread. I really do. But he said, could you by any chance get that recipe from that lady and start making hers? So I'm like, sure, I'll make a note of that. And yeah, definitely. But Braden's favorite verse throughout this whole journey is Philippians 4:13. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. He knew that he couldn't do it on his own. He knew when he would get really scared or the fevers would spike up and we didn't know if it would be an infection in the port, so we'd rush to the emergency room, and you felt like VIP people because the minute you entered that sliding door, you did not sit in the waiting room because he was immune compromised. He went straight back. Within 30 seconds or less, he was already accessed, and they were like, it was like on the TV shows, and I'm just sitting there like, okay, this is too fast, calm down, you know, why are we, but they just wanted to make sure if there's an infection in that port, it's going straight to the heart. And so he recognized that, and he would always say, get the people to pray, Mom, tell the people to pray, because he knew where his strength came from. And he just taught me that, you know, when I was worried throughout, my mom would just pray. In closing, I just want to share a story about a rock and a bone marrow transplant doctor that really touched our hearts. In 2008 or 9, I did a Bible study with my church, with the ladies, and it was on faith. It was very good. And God knew I needed that then to prepare my heart. We did a timeline throughout that 9 weeks of, you know, like your birth, your kids, when you went to college, marriage, kid, just everything, a long white piece of paper. And at the end of those 9 weeks, she passed around a basket full of rocks. And I have the rock still to this day. And I didn't know how meaningful it would be. And she said, everyone take your rock. And she said, hold it tight. And she said, I want you to remember all the things that you've been through in your timeline and how God has carried you through the dark valleys, through the hardships, through the losses. And I want this to be a rock of remembrance that you cling to for your faith in the Lord and that you can stand on God's promises in the Bible. Well, this bone marrow transplant doctor, she was a PA, so we called her Angie Peltz. I love her. She even got tickets for Braden to go see Kevin Durant when the Nuggets played, and he was just in awe. And after bone marrow transplant, every week we had to go draw blood. It was almost a pain. And he was so weak, sometimes he would be in the wheelchair, sometimes he would get in the wheelchair, and then he'd just lay up on the bed. And she would come in, and he would just be laying there like, I'm just, and his mouth was filled with mucositis, all these mouth sores, and he had it so bad it went all the way down in his lining through all the way. So that was healing, and he was laying there. I was kind of defeated, like, wow, this was hard. And she looked at him, and she said, Braden, we got to get some goals here. I know you're goal-oriented. We got to figure this out. You've got to get physical therapy. You've got to get back stronger because of the next treatments that you're about to get into. And she says, I think for you, young man, I think you need to go on some field trips through this hospital. What do you think about that? And he's just sitting there like, you know. And she said, wherever you want to go, wherever you want to learn, I'm going to make it happen. And so over the next couple weeks, every time we come up for blood work, sometimes he would be in the wheelchair. Sometimes he would get out of the wheelchair and push the wheelchair. And then other times he could start walking and sit a little. We went up on top of the helicopter pad to see that, where the Flight for Life, and I felt like I was up on a mountain. He got to go into where they make the chemo. No kid has ever been able to go in there, and we couldn't go past a certain part, but she told Braden how they measure in numbers and calculate and recalculate, and with the person's weight, they chart it. And then we went down in the basement. The physical therapist was standing there, and she's like, I've never been in the basement, Braden. She's like, and she says, I've never had a physical therapy kid be able to do the things you're doing. We walked down there, and he got to see how they do the blood, where they shoot it down through the chutes, and they measure the CBC counts. We walked through, and there was a chemist sitting there measuring and culturing the urines and dropping things in. We walked around in all these different tubings from surgeries. The doctor that was giving us the tour, she like opened one up and an appendix about fell out. And I'm like, no, that's okay. Put it back. A little too much. But she was just trying to shock and awe Braden there. And Braden, you know, he's just kind of expressionless. He's just, you know, taking it in. And so I happened to ask her, I said, hey, is the pathologist by any chance down here that reads the biopsies? And she said, yes, do you want to meet him? She said, in fact, the one that read Braden's is here. And so we walked through this hallway into this office and back in, and about three or four people came out, and they were standing there. And the doctor said, this is Braden Roberts. He has neuroblastoma stage 3, and he just completed bone marrow transplant. And I'm standing there because for me, it all began with the biopsy. And I wanted to meet that lady. That lady stood there with tears coming down her eyes. And I'm looking like, why is she crying? Like, I'm the parent. We're like going through this. And I just said, ma'am, I'm sorry. Are you okay? And she said, I'm sorry. This is overwhelming for me. We work in the basement with no windows. The biopsy has a number on it. It doesn't have a child's face or a child's name to it. It just now became personal. I remember reading his biopsy because we were shocked. She said, we kept testing it like it can't be. And I said, praise God, he's here. He's fighting. And we're going to keep going. We were able to take, and it's in the front part of the slides, we were able to take a picture with them. That was just a blessing. As we headed back up to the office, to Dr. Angie's, we got back to the clinic there, and she said, Braden, I'm going to be right back. She went to her office and she came back. And she went over to him and she said, Braden, she had a red rock. And I saw some writing on it, but I couldn't read it. And she handed that red rock to him and she said, I want you to put it in your hand. And so he took it. And she said, Braden, you have been through so much. and you have fought hard. I want you to remember this rock of all that you've been through. And she knew that we were a family of faith, and she said, I know you've got God on your side. And I want you to continue on with that rock as a remembrance to keep on going. That was so special to me. We walked out, and we were going to the parking garage. Braden didn't know I had a rock. And I said, can I see your rock, Braden? And he handed it to me. And on that rock, I thought it might be, say, something like good vibes or zen or something. It had a verse. God was using that doctor, and it said, Psalms 34:4. I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. That rock is very special to Braden. In closing, before the biopsy was given to us, I claimed two verses. I wrote them down on a whiteboard in our kitchen, and to this day, I cannot erase them. So that whiteboard is now up on my ledge, high up, and I had to get a new whiteboard. Sorry, Garrett. But it is Psalms 28:7. The Lord is my strength and my shield. My heart trusteth in him, and I am helped. Therefore, my heart greatly rejoiceth, and with my song will I praise him. And in Psalms 27:14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. I knew that my strength had to come from the Lord. I knew that in the waiting, I had to have strength, and he had to help me. But most importantly, I tried to focus on having that song of praise continually. And my challenge to you is that you will continue to have a song of praise, whatever dark valley you're in.